To me, fossil fuel organizing is part of a continuous life of organizing and activism. During the megaloads is when I got involved, when we were trying to block the movement of heavy equipment up to the tar sands. That's when I became involved with Rising Tide, really embraced the Rising Tide activism and the horizontal organization. But really, I don't see that activism around fossil fuels as anything different from my activism around racial justice or anti-poverty or union or anti-war work. So in that sense, I've been active for about, 55 or 60 years. Why I became involved in climate work in particular is because it seemed to me it was the overwhelming issue facing the world right now, and one which, unlike some of the others, had a timeline to it, which meant that didn't have much time to act. Of course, the victory of Trump and Trumpism and the right wing in the U.S. has made that even more of a lost cause, if you will. But nowhere in the world is any government really taking action at a level that would be required. Again, people have used the analogy of the mobilization around World War II, where in a matter of months, the U.S. completely changed its industrial focus and began producing for the war effort. What would be required to really meet the challenge of climate change would be a comparable, tremendous change in the entire U.S. economy. And it's quite possible, as was shown during the World War II mobilization, but it's not going to happen unless people are forced to do it. And so far, our attempts to force the system, and when I say the system, I'm talking about global corporate capitalism. I mean, I think that's very clear, that there really is no solution to climate change within the context of global corporate capitalism, unless and until capitalists decide that it's in their monetary interest to do so. If there's any hope right now, this is not a happy thought and not something that folks would probably agree with, but I think if there's any hope of really meeting the climate challenge right at the moment, it's that some sectors of the ruling class begin to understand that it is both necessary and to their financial interest to do so. I wish I could say that it's going to be a mass movement that will force rapid mobilization to meet the challenge of climate change, but I haven't seen evidence to date of people's willingness to engage in that kind of a movement. Clearly, there are some people who understand and who are willing to pay a heavy price. I'm thinking about the valve turners who have shut off the flow of tar sands oil for a whole day entirely across the United States and who may be facing many years in prison. But that's not a mass movement, and it's only a mass movement that would make the change. And my experience is that it's only when people are personally affected in ways that become intolerable that they really become part of a mass movement. There is only one issue, and that issue is a vision of a world in which justice and compassion and equality are central to the human experience. And whether it's climate change or war or immigrant rights or women's rights or white supremacy, I mean, all of these things are part of one picture of a world which is not characterized by those values and those concerns. And at the moment, that is most reflected by a system of global corporate capitalism in which these issues become of very little importance and are always subsumed under the need for profit, a system based upon personal greed and short-term gain. And what's happened in my lifetime is that that system has become more and more powerful, more and more hegemonic, and there are fewer and fewer alternative forces at work. global corporate capitalism is an enormously effective system at producing stuff at great cost to the world and its inhabitants.
Can you talk more about your background in organizing, you know, how you first got involved in activism as a whole, and some of the connections that you might make between this movement and others?
Well, I got involved just out of applying the values that my parents had taught me about equality and justice. They had taught it to me not by virtue of their political activism. They weren't at all politically active. They were working class Jewish folks in Chicago. My father only went through the eighth grade. My mother graduated high school. When I was in high school, my first activity was to march against nuclear weapons with a Ban the Bomb march in Chicago. I don't know what brought me into that, except, I was kind of going to school and I was part of an interracial relations club and started to get some interest in that. And then by the time I was in college, I became more of an activist around civil rights issues, and I became very involved, first at the University of Illinois and then at University of Chicago very heavily. I decided I was a socialist and a pacifist, having never met either one of those, but got involved in a socialist organization at the University of Chicago, sat in at the administration building, occupied the president's office at University of Chicago, learned some important lessons about the way in which we were lied to and manipulated by the university administration. Went off to Indiana University, where I continued being part of this socialist group. At that point, SNCC was very active across the South, and I became a SNCC support person, organized a support of freedom fighter program where we had people donating money to SNCC, and in return they would adopt a specific SNCC field worker and would get monthly reports about what that field worker was doing. Then went on, I actually got a job working for the National Labor Relations Board for a while and did that as a field examiner, then became a union organizer briefly, and then in Chicago, which was where I was living, became involved in a community organization that was aligned with other community organizations. We were the only white group, the others were mostly Hispanic, and we did anti-war work, we did racial justice work, we did youth organizing, and we ran people for political office, people who were explicitly radicals, and not because we thought we'd win, but because we used these campaigns as ways of doing organizing and so forth. I don't know, I eventually went back to school and got a master's degree in labor studies with the intent of teaching at a labor extension program like LIRC here in Oregon. I graduated when Reagan got elected and cut the funding for all those programs around the country. I was working in factories during a lot of this period of time and became a journeyman machinist and model maker. Ended up moving to Oregon and getting a job at OHSU, where I had a machine shop in the hospital. I was very involved while I was at OHSU, both in labor work. I was vice president of the local, of the first AFSCME local up there, which I helped bring in. I keep doing what I'm doing because I don't know what else to do with my life. This has been my life. It's the only thing that is meaningful to me. And so I will, I assume, continue doing it. You know, I fear for the rest of the human and non-human races, what's going to take to make that mobilization happen.
You've been listening to a 2017 interview with Portland activist Loewen Berman. This has been Desiree Helliger for the Oldham Variety Hour.